The Crusaders are setting up these cases, case after case after case, claiming religious freedom, and then the conservative justices are coming through, and it's a collaboration. The crusade to weaponize religious freedom is a collaboration. They are setting out to make America a Christian nation by changing the very meaning of the First Amendment. It's appalling what is happening at the Supreme Court. That this court ignores the rules and ignores precedent so that it can take and decide these cases. That this court rips apart that long-standing precedent, some of it dating back to the founding, so that it can weaponize religious freedom. And that this court will literally rewrite facts and reality to reverse engineer decisions so that it can privilege conservative Christians.
That's Andrew Seidel, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Andrew Seidel, Weaponizing Religious Freedom. The separation of church and state has long been a cornerstone of American democracy. The founders of the Republic, Jefferson, Madison, et al., insisted on a secular government unencumbered by religious dogma. However, in recent years, decisions by a conservative-dominated Supreme Court have increasingly blurred that barrier. How has this happened? Enter Leonard Leo and a pile of money. Co-chair of the highly influential Federalist Society, he has been in the forefront of weaponizing religious freedom. According to Andrew Seidel, Leo is universally recognized as the man who orchestrated the hostile takeover of the Supreme Court. He is responsible for the nomination and confirmation of John Roberts, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Leo chose them, Seidel says, for their crusader ideology. The erosion of secular values poses a threat to democracy. To talk about weaponizing religious freedom is Andrew Seidel. A constitutional attorney, he's vice president of Americans for Separation of Church and State. He's the author of American Crusade, How the Supreme Court is Weaponizing Religious Freedom. He spoke at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison in mid-November 2022. And now, Andrew Seidel.
Universal freedom or Christian privilege? Protection or weapon? Religious freedom has long been a shield. It's been that protection for the minority against the tyranny of the majority. It's protected all of us, from atheists to evangelicals, Muslims to Mormons, Buddhists to Baptists, and everybody in between. Never, never in our history has it been a license to violate the rights of other people or to harm other people. But this packed Supreme Court, collaborating with a well-funded and powerful network of Christian nationalist organizations, we're going to call them crusaders, is changing that. They're changing the very meaning of this constitutional right. They're deliberately warping, perverting the meaning of religious freedom as a constitutional protection. So the Bible tells of beating swords into plowshares. But this packed court, in case after case brought by these crusaders, is doing the opposite. They are beating this universal freedom, this protection, into a weapon of Christian supremacy, a weapon that conservative Christians, and pretty much only conservative Christians, get to use to injure other people, to violate their rights, and impose their religion on everybody else. The crusaders are the legal groups that are joining in this fight. They make up sort of this kind of like billion-dollar shadow network, and $1 billion is not an exaggeration. The organization I now work for, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, in one of our most recent cases before the Supreme Court, you may have heard of this case. It was Coach Kennedy versus the Bremerton School District, the football coach. They wanted to impose his religion on other people's children at the 50-yard line. That case, we added up the budgets of the groups on the other side of this case, and it totaled over $1 billion. So this is a $1 billion shadow network. And the groups here are, let's see, Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, First Liberty Institute, the American Center for Law and Justice, Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, right? This is a veritable Orwellian word salad. And the Crusaders are setting up these cases, like the Coach case, case after case after case, claiming religious freedom, and then the conservative justices are coming through and knocking them down. It's a collaboration. The crusade to weaponize religious freedom is a collaboration. You have to understand that. And it is also, the reason I use the word crusade is because this is a war of conquest. It truly is. It's not, they're not looking to conquer land, but they are looking to conquer our Constitution and remake it in their image. They are setting out to make America a Christian nation by changing the very meaning of the First Amendment. It's appalling what is happening at the Supreme Court right now. So American Crusade tells the stories of what happened in each of those cases. And a lot of these cases are going to be cases that you remember. You remember hearing about them in the news. Maybe you remember them coming down. The gay wedding cake case out of Colorado. You may remember that one. The COVID cases when churches were challenging health restrictions. The Muslim ban case. And then there's actually already an update to the book available on the website for everybody who's got a copy that goes over the Coach case, the abortion case, the Dobbs decision, which just struck down, which is absolutely part of this crusade. And then there's also all these kind of cases that you may not remember that are just as important. Cases about school vouchers. Cases about a huge cross on government property maintained with your taxpayer funds. The Hobby Lobby case. Some of you may or may not remember that one. And I've lived these cases. I've been on the front lines for a decade fighting these cases. I've briefed some, I've argued others, I've coordinated with the other groups who are litigating them. And what I really wanted to do was tell the true stories behind these cases. Because the way you remember them is inaccurate. What you've been taught and told and remember about these cases is not a true reflection of what really happened and often what the true arguments were in those cases. If you remember back to 2005, Chief Justice John Roberts, in his testimony when he was nominated, said that he's just a judge who just calls balls and strikes. That's all judges are supposed to do. There's actually a great new online article, or excuse me, media outlet that's critical of the court called Balls and Strikes and abbreviates itself BS, because that is. The other judges don't do that. I mean, Roberts and the other judges, they absolutely do not. They manipulate the facts and the law to reach a desired outcome. And in American Crusade, I actually dug deeper. I interviewed a lot of the folks that were involved in these cases. I went back and watched interviews. I listened to interviews. I went to oral arguments. All of these different things, I dug deep to give you the true story. So, for instance, in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, that's the gay wedding cake case out of Colorado, I actually interviewed the couple that was involved in that case. I was the first person to speak to them after the case was decided. And if you recall that decision, the Supreme Court actually essentially said that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which was the body in charge of enforcing the state Civil Rights Act, they said that the commission was hostile to the bakery's religion. And that's why they decided against the couple. And they said that because there were two commissioners who said mean things about the baker's religion. I kid you not. Essentially, the Supreme Court called these two commissioners who worked for the Civil Rights Commission anti-religious bigots. And so I actually went and I interviewed those two commissioners. So American Crusade will tell you the true stories of these cases, what actually happened. And then there are some through lines that become clear as you see these stories, that this court wants to take these cases, that this court ignores the rules and ignores precedent so that it can take and decide these cases, that this court rips apart that long-standing precedent, some of it dating back to the founding, so that it can weaponize religious freedom, and that this court will literally rewrite facts and reality to reverse engineer decisions so that it can privilege conservative Christians. So those through lines provide this overarching narrative so that you can understand what is really going on. And I hope, I tried to give you that without the legalese and the jargon. Because we lawyers, we love to sound like lawyers. And I think a lot of times we hide behind legalese and jargon, and that makes the law inaccessible. And I did not want to do that. I think it's better to shed those trappings and look at the core of the cases, and I wanted to make it accessible for everybody. Because you have to understand what is going on. You have to understand the threat that we face and that our Constitution faces. And I think when you cut through all of that piffle and prattle that we lawyers love, you get to some pretty clear truths very early on. And the first one is that cases of religious freedom and the law colliding are actually pretty easy to solve. Most of these cases are not that difficult. The questions that arise are very easy to get to a result that would make everybody happy. So can a business, a limited liability corporation, refuse to serve a gay couple in violation of the civil rights laws because that owner is a conservative Christian? What about erecting and maintaining that 40-foot tall Christian cross on government land with your taxpayer dollars? Can believers ignore rules that protect public health? Do Christians have a right to use the government's taxing power to fund their private Christian schools, even though we already pay for a public education system? Can the government official, or any government official actually, use their state power and state resources to promote their personal religion? What about giving one narrow religious belief the force of law to take away bodily autonomy from half the population? I mean, the answer to each of these questions should very obviously and very easily be a no. But the Crusaders have confused many Americans about where we draw these lines, deliberately, I think. And historically and legally, I do not think these are hard questions, again. And you can solve most of them by answering or drawing three basic lines. Now, I told you I tried to shun legalese, so I labeled these lines number one, lines number two, and line number three. Try to keep up, I know. And the first line, line number one, is we distinguish between action and belief. Your right to believe is absolute. Your right to act on that belief is not. So I open the book with stories about people letting Jesus take the wheel. Right? They can believe that Jesus wants to take the wheel, but if they act on that belief, the civil law can step in and say no. We can fine them. We can take away their license. We can maybe force them into therapy. Maybe they go to jail if they do some real damage, and there are a couple of people who did. Your right to believe is unlimited. Your right to act on that belief is not. That's line number one. So then the second line is, okay, well, if the civil law can step in, when or where? Where do we say that's okay? And this is easy, too. Where the rights of other people begin. You've all heard the old legal adage, your right to swing your fist ends at the other person's nose. Your right to exercise your religion ends where the rights of other people begin. Pretty basic. And then the third line is the line between church and state. And I think our side has done a remarkably bad job of talking about this. But our government has no religion to exercise. And it is an absolute abuse of power for a government official to use that power to promote their personal religion or use resources. And we ought to be talking about it like that, I think, a little bit more. So American Crusade lays out those lines, lays out those overarching themes, and then you can see in the true stories how these lines would apply and how the cases should have shaken out. And we see what should have happened. We see how easy it would have been to get to the right result in most of these cases. And you also see, when all of that nebulous twaddle is cut away, what is very clear, and that this is truly a crusade to alter the meaning of our First Amendment. And the question that I kept coming back to when I was writing this, after I would dive into every one of these cases and be blown away by how badly things had been distorted, was why? Why are they waging this crusade? Why are they seeking this weapon? And the answer to that is that it is largely a backlash against equality realized. And what I mean by that is that conservative white Christian American status as the dominant group in this country has been on the wane for a long time. Obviously so. They've lost the power and the privilege and the deference which they believe they are due. And if you want a really good example of this from a Supreme Court justice, I would encourage you to go listen to Justice Sam Alito's speech in Rome this summer, which he gave at the Notre Dame Religious Freedom Summit. And he talked about how his religion was not being given the deference he believed it was due. Really remarkable. And we know that when a dominant group, I like to move, I'm going to try to stay near the mic for the radio. We know that when a dominant group or caste in a society feels threatened, that it reacts or overreacts in certain ways, often authoritarian ways. And that is why we are seeing conservative white Christian Americans turn to these so-called strongmen like Donald Trump, turn to Christian nationalism, turn to a violent insurrection, and turn to weaponizing religious freedom with this crusade. And there are actually some really fascinating studies that back this up. One survey found that simply mentioning the changing religious demographics in this country triggered a threat response in conservative white American Christians. And what I mean by that is that they went to more defensive political stances. So simply acknowledging the shifting demographics drove them towards Christian nationalism and drove them towards Donald Trump. And that suggests that they fundamentally misunderstand religious freedom as privilege. Truly, they enjoy the trappings of their dominant status. That is what they believe religious freedom means. And I was joking about the war on Christmas, but I mean, they see inclusion as a threat. The recognition of others, the existence of others, is threatening to their status. So to them, it's part of the war. It's a war on Christmas, right? I mean, and actually, I wasn't going to read from the book, but I will read this part, because this is why I dedicated the book to American Christian nationalists. We're not coming for your rights, we're coming for your privilege. The crusade, the actual legal cases that are decided by this court, are all part of this quest to remake that protection into a weapon for maintaining that dominant group status. That's what they really are seeking here. And the expansion of equality and the withering of their racial and religious hegemony is the contested territory in most of these cases. Essentially, conservative white Christian Americans are raging against the dying of their privilege. And so they declare war. And in case after case, they are succeeding. And that is the story that American Crusade tells. And I believe it is not like a book that you have read before, because it's exposing an attempt to warp and distort our law. It shows you that the justices are eager to take these cases, right? The Supreme Court gets to decide what cases it takes and doesn't. It rejects something like 97 to 99% of the cases, depending on which term you're looking at. And they decide almost every religious freedom case that comes their way and decide them in favor of conservative Christians. Again, the simple fact is that this court wants to decide these cases. You know, the conservative justices on our court, they really are not impartial justices that are working to carefully determine the meaning of constitutional provisions without bias. Right? Again, the Crusaders didn't pack the court to have impartial justices deciding cases impartially. They put collaborators on the court on purpose. They blew all their political capital to do it. And I think that's probably the hardest truth for a lot of Americans. Maybe not people listening, but certainly if you're a lawyer or have argued in front of courts, I think that's one of the hardest things for us to realize, is that the ultra-conservative justices on this Supreme Court are crusaders too. So Leonard Leo is universally recognized as the man who packed our Supreme Court, orchestrated the hostile takeover, and I found an interview with a former employee who described Leo's mission like this. Quote, he figured out 20 years ago that conservatives had lost the culture war. Abortion, gay rights, contraception, conservatives didn't have a chance if public opinion prevailed. So they needed to stack the courts. And that's what they did. And pause to truly appreciate the anti-democratic goal in that, right? If we don't stack the courts, the majority's gonna rule. If we don't stack the courts, democracy's gonna work and we're gonna lose. And overall, we know that Leo's group spent about $540 million packing the court from the time of blocking Merrick Garland up through putting Amy Coney Barrett on the court, so 2014 to 2020. And this summer, the news broke that Leo's new group received a $1.6 billion, that is billion with a B, dollar donation from one donor. That's $1 billion more than he spent packing the Supreme Court. You'll learn that his job before that, Leo's job was described when it came to judicial nominees. He ran the Federalist Society, he ran the Judicial Crisis Network. He was described as the, quote, monitor of the nominee's ideological purity. The monitor of the nominee's ideological purity. He was the guy who was picking judges and justices for our Supreme Court. You remember the three lists of justices, potential justices that Trump put out when he was running? Leo wrote those lists. We know that he is responsible for the nomination and confirmation of John Roberts, Sam Alito, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Clarence Thomas was a member of the Federalist Society, as were those other five that I just mentioned. There's video of Clarence Thomas and Leonard Leo joking on stage at a Federalist Society event in Texas, talking about how Leo is the third most powerful man in America, joking about it. So six votes on the Supreme Court, Leo chose five of them, and he chose them for their ideology. And it's a crusader ideology. So again, I know it's a hard truth for some people to swallow. I see a lot of heads nodding, so maybe not as much, but these justices truly are crusaders. And I want to just pause on John Roberts for a second here, because he's getting this reputation in the media about being maybe more of a moderate, which is nonsense. I mean, just utter nonsense, which I do talk about a lot in the book. But I just want to share a couple points about Roberts' history when it comes to the crusade to weaponize religious freedom in particular. When he was in the first Bush's Department of Justice alongside Ken Starr, he wrote briefs arguing that public schools can impose prayer on other people's kids, at graduation ceremonies in particular, and that Christian Bible clubs can use public schools to organize and promote their work. And then when he was in the Reagan White House, he actually supported a constitutional amendment that would have allowed public schools to impose prayer on kids. And in a legal memo, he said, quote, "We still have an uphill battle to return prayer to schools. We battle return prayer to school." That is the language of a crusader, very clearly. And the ploy to capture the courts worked. And we've got data to show that it worked. So before Roberts was Chief Justice, these religion won in front of the court a little less than half the time, between 40 and 45% of the time. After Roberts takes over, that ticks up to 82%. And it's not a shift in favor of religious freedom. It is a shift in favor of Christianity. And if you do those numbers, it was mainstream Christianity was favored about 44% of the time before Roberts, and that nearly doubles up to 85% of the time under Roberts. And those numbers, by the way, do not include the two most recent terms, which were just barn burners for conservative Christians. So American Crusade works to put a face on those numbers, on both sides, right? So if you look at the Muslim ban and some of the other recent death penalty cases, you see that this idea of religious freedom does not apply outside of conservative Christianity. Religious freedom is only for the select few in front of the Roberts Court, the conservative Christians. So I want to get to your questions. I'm going to close out here. But I do have a captive audience, which is like a lawyer's favorite thing. So at this Supreme Court, justice is no longer blind. The new guiding principle of this Supreme Court is not the Constitution or the law, but simply this: Christianity wins. That's it. You want to make money betting on the outcome of a Supreme Court case? If it involves religious freedom, bet on the Christians. Religious freedom is no longer a right that we possess individually and equally. Right? Sometimes other religions are going to win in front of the court, sure. But this court does not consider religious freedom a universal freedom. It considers it a Christian privilege. The one thing I will say on the good side of all of this is that this crusade is in a way suicidal. Their wins grow our opposition to it. Their wins in the abortion case, in the case of the coach imposing his religion on other people's kids, in the case out of Maine, which forces now taxpayers to fund these Christian schools that indoctrinate kids and or just brutally discriminate against any LGBTQ students or staff or families. Their wins swell our ranks. And remember, the whole reason for this crusade in the first place is the changing demographics and the fear that they have from that loss of their dominant group status. So their wins not only grow our side, but are actually creating a feedback loop that is furthering their own demise. I think you could see some of that in the election numbers. And that's because white Christian nationalists are working to privilege the chosen few. Every legislative and legal victory they notch alienates more people. It drives more people into our arms. It wakes more people up to the danger. And it really does drive, we've seen this at the group I work for, Americans United for Separation of Church and State. It drives more people into our arms. That's the group that I'm proud to represent on the front lines. Their power-hungry aggression is growing our movement. And I do believe, despite how bleak sometimes things look, it's a good moment now. Post-election, I'm feeling much better. I do believe in the end that we will win. And that is because they are fighting only for themselves. And where they are selfish, we are selfless. We're fighting for we the people, all the people. And they're fighting for we the conservative Christians, and that's it. I'll say this, I'll just say there are more concrete solutions that I get into in the book. I'm sure some of you will ask about some. None of them are quick and easy. And that is, I think, the most important thing you need to take away. I do believe we can win this, but it's not going to be, there's no silver bullet. The Crusaders played a very long game, and they won. They're doing a massive amount of damage, and it's going to take us a long time to undo that damage, but I think we can. And above all, I think what we have to do, especially lawyers out there, is we have to shatter the myth that this judicial system is going to fix this for us. It is part of the problem. It truly, truly is. So we have to shatter that myth, and above all, we have to organize and message in ways that builds power. And that is what American Crusade aims to do. And with that, I will stop for questions. Thank you.
You're listening to Andrew Seidel, Weaponizing Religious Freedom. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program and his book, American Crusade, call us 1-800-444-1977. Again, 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
The question is about Justice Scalia, whether he had specific skills as a crusader that made him effective. I think not, actually. I do talk about Scalia a couple times in the book, in particular in one case called Employment Division v. Smith, which is a case about drug counselors taking drugs and then getting fired for taking drugs and then not getting unemployment as a result, a case that's been just, like, distorted beyond all recognition for the most part. And Scalia had a penchant for bombast and hyperbole and an acid pen. He was a true bigot, actually, is what it boils down to. And that helped and hurt him. It drew attention to his writing, especially in law schools and in the media. He got quoted a lot more, and that was actually why he did it. We have him on record saying that. But it also hurt him in the long run because he couldn't resist including that in opinions. And so I talk about that a lot in the Smith case and how I think he kind of blew it a little bit in that case in the opinion that he wrote. I do not think he was a particularly effective crusader in terms of consummating many of these cases because he had a very hard time drawing people to his opinions and building any type of consensus, and he was doing it largely before the court was packed. And I think he hurt probably more than he helped in the long run with his bigotry. Is the ABA fair and impartial when they vet candidates for the Supreme Court? Yeah, so ABA basically nominated